Chapter 35, The Shoot. The shooting of the film was a blast, but getting to work with such experienced and talented movie actors proved to be a double-edged sword. Now, I understand that all swords have two edges, so let me save some time by taking that back and just saying that getting to work with such experienced and talented movie stars was a sword. By watching these actors work, I could study them and steal many of their acting tricks. But I always felt they had no respect for me as the star of the film. Often I would catch them gathered together as I performed a scene, and I could not ignore their withering glances. They looked at me the way real vampires look at Count Chocula. But that was not to be the worst of it. Not by a long shot. I had brought Adam Egott to Toronto to assist me on the film. Once again, I must emphasize with all the vigor at my command that Adam Egott never once assisted me. On the 10th night in Toronto, Bob Saget woke me in the middle of the night. There was a problem with one of the cameras from the previous day's shoot, and we would have to redo a scene before the sun came up. So I stumbled out of bed and phoned Adam Egott, but there was no answer. I knocked on his hotel room door. No answer. So I took a cab to the set. We reshot the scene, then I rushed back to get 2 hours of shut-eye. When I woke up, there was Adam Egott with a muffin and a coffee. "How'd you sleep, boss?" "Not well. Where the hell were you last night?" "I was in my room." "I phoned you 100 times. You didn't pick up." "Oh, yeah, that phone is broke," he said, blushing. "I knocked on your door for 10 minutes. "Yeah, I think that door might be broke, too." "Where the hell is my paper?" "What paper?" "The Toronto Star you bring me every day with my muffin and coffee?" "Oh, the guy at the front desk said they went out of business." "That's absurd. Go get me my Toronto Star, Adam Egott." He returned 10 minutes later with a newspaper with the front page torn off. "What's going on?" "The guy said you could have this one for free since it has no front page." "Tell me the truth, Adam Egott." "A young man's body was found in a ravine last night. He was a teenage runaway, just like the rest. I thought you might suspect me." "Did you have anything to do with this?" "No, of course not, boss." "Well, where were you last night, then?" "I couldn't sleep, so I did what I always do when I have insomnia. I went out and found a ravine to relax in." "A ravine?" "Yeah, a ravine." "Was it the ravine where the teenager's body was discovered?" "Oh, no. Jeez, I could see why you'd be suspicious if it was the same ravine. No, this kid was found 2 ravines over." "Well, who the hell goes to a ravine to relax?" "Not me anymore, that's for sure. This whole thing's given me the willies." "Well, I told everybody that you weren't in your room last night. The police will be all over the set, and if anybody tells the cops that..." "I'm scared, Norm. Should I buy a gun?" "A gun? No. That would be the worst thing you could do. If the police talk to you, you have to tell them you couldn't sleep last night, so you went for a walk down Yonge Street." I paused for a moment. "You wouldn't kill a string of runaway teenagers, would you?" "Norm, you know I couldn't harm a fly." "Right. But what about a teenager?" "Never." "Okay, buddy, let's get to work." That morning scene was one where Artie and I got in a huge bar fight. It was very physical and involved a lot of stuntmen. I didn't want the stuntmen to roll after they landed, because I always thought that looked fake in movies. I wanted them to stop abruptly when they hit the cement, which was much more painful for the stuntmen. Frank, Fred, Saget, and I were going through the choreography of the thing when I saw 2 police officers in the corner, speaking with Adam Egott. "Hold on, guys," I said. "My stupid friend needs my help." By the time I'd made it to Adam Egott, he was already cuffed and being led away. "Hold on, hold on. There must be some mistake." "We're just going to the station and having a little talk, that's all," said one of the cops. Well, that settled it. There was not much I could do but get back to work and forget about this. Chris Farley showed up, and we all sat down to have some breakfast. 20 minutes later, I got a phone call. Adam Egott had made a full confession to the murder of 14 teenagers. I phoned Robert Simons at once. "Robert, you're not going to like what I'm going to tell you." I told him the whole affair. "Norm, I'm going to be straight with you because I've been in this business a long time. If the star of a movie has a personal assistant who, during the production of that movie, butchers over a dozen teenagers, that's going to hurt at the box office." "Well, he had nothing to do with it, Robert." A production assistant suddenly ran from the other side of the room and whispered in my ear. "Oh, well, this is not good news, Robert. I've just been told the media has dubbed this affair the Dirty Work Murders. Now, that doesn't seem fair at all." "We might have to pull the plug on this, Norm." And he hung up. At the police station, I muscled my way through the crush of reporters to get inside. When I saw Adam Egott, he was sitting in a small interrogation room with a big smile on his face and two pies on the table before him. One of them was nearly finished. "Hey, Adam Egott, how are you holding up?" "Fine. We can leave soon. I just wanted to finish this second pie. The first was cherry, but I saved my favorite for last. Strawberry rhubarb." He whispered the last part as if it was a secret. "Why do you think we can leave after you finish eating?" "Because that's the deal. The policeman asked me what I wanted, and I said I wanted to go home. And he asked if I wanted anything else, and I said two fresh pies. And he said that if I signed a paper, that I could get my pies and then go home." "That paper you signed, Adam Egott, that was a confession that said you killed 14 people. But Norm, you know I couldn't murder a fly." I wasn't sure what to do. "We'll get you the best court-appointed attorney in the whole city." Back on location, the arrest of Adam Egott had cast gloom across the set. I hadn't told anyone about it, but word gets out in this media-soaked age. Every day, the actors would have to dodge the press on their way to work, and the questions invariably had nothing to do with the film. The media, as usual, was interested in one thing and one thing only. I decided to hold a press conference so these buzzards would finally leave us alone. "Ladies and gentlemen of the press," I said, "I appreciate that your city has endured a nightmare of vicious murders that began 2 days after we started pre-production on our movie, Dirty Work, an MGM film that will make its theatrical debut next summer. The motion picture has very good buzz about it, and I would hate if this unpleasantness somehow hurt that. Of course, a film is not as important as a young person's precious life. I understand that my personal assistant, Adam Egott, has been dragged into this unfortunate affair by signing a full confession to all of the killings. But, trust me, Adam Egott couldn't murder a fly. He just has a sweet tooth, that's all. And since when did loving a fresh-baked pie become a crime? Also, I would implore you not to continue to refer to these killings as the Dirty Work Murders. I know that's a lot to ask, so, in order to help, I have come up with a list of names for these murders that I honestly feel are much better. I will be handing the list out to you after I have finished speaking, along with a Dairy Queen gift certificate for $100. I will now take questions, and I hope some of them will be about the film." None of them were. I finished the presser and returned to the set. We were shooting a great scene that day. It had been Fred Wolf's idea. In the scene, Artie and I break into a mansion and hide rotting fish inside, thinking it will be unbearable for the people who live there. While we are busy hiding dead fish, the owners come home, and Artie and I hide in the next room. But the owner is there to complete a multi-million-dollar drug deal, which goes horribly wrong, leading to a shootout, a chainsaw murder, and finally a grenade that kills everybody. But all that activity is heard off-screen, while the camera stays on Artie and me, frozen, holding our ridiculous fish, our expressions never changing. I wanted the shot to be completely static, for Artie and me to be totally still, and I wanted the scene to last for 1 minute. We initially had trouble filming the scene because after cameras were trained on our faces, Saget started saying things like, Okay, now you hear gunshots, and uh-oh, a guy has a machine gun, and now a guy has just pulled out a chainsaw, and on it went. It was very distracting. But the idea was that Artie and I would have one blank expression of terror for the whole scene, and it was tough to hold that while Saget was blabbing on and on. I finally told Bob to just say action, and a minute later say cut. The take went well, and we were happy, but it didn't last for long. Wouldn't you know it, moments after we finished the scene, a production assistant came up and silently handed me that day's Toronto Star. Dirty work killer admits to 60 more crimes in the Toronto area. It was beginning to look like Adam Egget was more trouble than he was worth. After the day's shooting, I went back to visit him. He was weeping softly and shoveling pie into his mouth. Adam Egget, I said, I'll get you pie if you want pie. You must stop signing things. I'm afraid, Norm. Do they have the chair up here in Canada? No, they don't have the death penalty. The news put a big smile on his face, and he ate his pie faster. But we're going to get you off on this, Adam Egget. Don't worry. And so we toiled on the movie. But what should have been a joyous time was instead full of grief, as funny scenes were trumped by coroner's inquests, and Dirty Work, which had been conceived as a buddy film, became the nickname of the most notorious crime in Canadian history. I couldn't wait for the whole thing to be over, so I could get back to the United States and as far from Adam Egget as possible. Even though I knew he was innocent, I was tired of the whole affair, and when it came down to it, with Adam Egget's small brain, life on the inside would be the same for him as life on the outside. I just hoped none of this would hurt the movie or my career. Then one day, something wonderful happened. Jack Warden approached me as I ate lunch. "Did you read the paper today?" he asked, beaming. "No, Jack. Why?" I asked. "I'll tell you why, kid. A runaway teenager was found dead this morning in a ravine." "No way. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard." "Isn't it?" said Jack. "That clears your boy, Adam Egget." "It sure does. And it means they won't shut down the film." Saget came running in, deliriously happy, clutching a newspaper. "They found a murdered teenage boy in a ravine this morning. Isn't it fantastic?" Farley entered, dancing a jig, and bellowed, "Guess what, everybody? A monster is still on the loose, and no teenager in Toronto is safe. Yahoo!" It seemed everybody was getting the good news at the same time. And that day, the mood of the movie set changed for good. It's funny how something as small as the news of a teenager being slaughtered and tossed in a ravine can be enough to lift the spirits of an entire set full of important Hollywood people. The next day, Adam Egget was released from prison, and the press stopped using the term the Dirty Work Murders, and instead called them the Very Bad Guy Murders, which was one of my original suggestions. We returned to work on the film, and from that point on, it was the best summer I ever had. Footnote. In 2006, a drifter from Baffin Island named Albert H. Codfish was arrested for the Very Bad Guy Murders. He made a full confession. In 2008, the City Council of Toronto passed a law commanding that every ravine in the metro area be manned by police officers night and day. Since then, in the city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, no one has killed anyone. It turned out that my worries about Bob Saget were unfounded. He did a great job directing the film, and there isn't a performance in the whole movie that isn't funny. When the film finally opened, the critics were split. Some hated it, while others hated its guts. But it didn't matter to the public. On its opening weekend, Dirty Work grossed $250 million.